Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to this February 15th meeting of the Minnesota House of Representatives Transportation Finance and Policy Committee. I'm Frank Hornstein, the chair. Welcome. And we will now do our first item of business, which will be to establish a quorum. Mr. Dodge will take the role.
Chair Hornstein?
Present.
Hornstein, present. Vice Chair Cagle?
Present.
Cagle, present. Representative Petersburg?
Petersburg, present.
Petersburg, present. Representative Barr?
Here.
Barr, present. Representative Bernardi? Representative Bernardi? Representative Elkins?
Elkins, present.
Elkins, present. Representative Frederick?
Present.
Frederick, present. Representative Hausman?
Present.
Hausman, present. Representative Heinrich? Representative Heinrich?
I'm unmuted.
Representative Koznick?
Present.
Koznick, present. Representative Mason? Representative Mason? Representative Murphy? Representative Murphy? Representative Nelson?
Nelson, present.
Nelson, present. Representative Olson?
Present.
Olson, present. Representative Richardson?
Present.
Richardson, present. Representative Torkelson?
Torkelson, present.
Torkelson, present. Representative West?
Present.
West, present. There is a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. Our next item of business is approval of the minutes from our February 10th meeting. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Dodge did a good job, and so I move the approval of those minutes.
Okay, thank you, Representative Petersburg. To the motion, is there any discussion? Members, this can be a voice vote, so if you can unmute, all those in favor of the Petersburg motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Members, we don't have bills before us today. However, we do have very important information, an informational hearing upcoming. We, of course, have oversight over three agencies in the executive branch, the Metropolitan Council, MnDOT, and the Department of Public Safety in terms of finance and policy jurisdiction. We'll hear from two of the three agencies today. The governor did propose a supplemental budget a couple of weeks ago now, and as is our custom and tradition in our committee, we will hear from those agencies about their supplemental budget proposals. We will hear from MnDOT today and then the Department of Public Safety. We'll have the agencies go through their presentations, and then I'll call on members if you have individual questions. So we'll start off today with Commissioner Anderson Kelleher. And Commissioner Anderson Kelleher, just on a personal note, I want to, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for your service to the state in your capacity as MnDOT Commissioner. We will miss you. We're lucky in Minneapolis to have you. And this is really, I think, the last time we will hear your testimony and your wisdom. Which I hope we can continue to engage with you even in your new position. So with just so much gratitude, I call on you, Commissioner Anderson Kelleher, to present the governor's MnDOT budget for the supplemental year 2022.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Margaret Anderson Kelleher. I'm the Commissioner of Transportation, and I just want to thank you, all of the members of this committee, all of the staff members, both partisan and nonpartisan, for all of their work over the last 3 years. It's actually been very, I think we've done some very good work. A couple of really, in particular, the last bill was very remarkable in terms of the work that was done. And I, too, wish all of you the best as you go through the rest of this session. But I am honored to be able to present the governor's supplemental budget recommendation to your committee today and look forward to your questions. Mr. Chair, about how long would you like this presentation to be just to be able to account for the other presentation and the questions, just so I'm keeping track of time?
Madam Commissioner, we envisioned maybe around 50 minutes or so. We want to leave enough time for the Department of Public Safety, even though I know your budget is a bit more complicated. And of course, you have the IAJA money. And so we are setting aside a little bit more time for your presentation. But we're a bit flexible, but I think in the neighborhood of about 50 minutes.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that'll be just fine. So my colleague, Sam Brown, is going to, I believe he's on here. He's going to share his screen. He's with the MnDOT Budget Office, and we are going to present this in tandem together. So the first slides, of course, you will all be able to almost repeat them at this point with me about the overview of the department. And first of all, our vision as Minnesota's multimodal transportation system that maximizes the health of people, the environment, and our economy. And of course, our mission is to plan, build, maintain, operate that safe system. We're gonna keep going because I wanna get to the meat of this. We, of course, many of you know, are the fourth largest roadway system in the nation with over 145,000 centerline miles. That includes both trunk highways and local roads. And of course, just a little under 5,000 bridges in the state of Minnesota that are greater than 10 feet in length on trunk highway routes. So a little more about MnDOT. You will see here that we are an aging system. 50% of our state highways and 35% of our state bridges are more than 50 years old. And we have averaged about 156 construction projects statewide in 2021 and $21 billion in planned state investments in our state highway system over the next 20 years. That's $21 billion, which we'll talk a little bit about how we get there with state funds and federal funds and the help of the IIJA is really significant there. Next, we also have 7 active ports that we work with, 3 Lake Superior ports, 4 Mississippi River ports. Of course, there are some private ports in the state of Minnesota as well. Transit services in all the 80 non-metro counties, 133 publicly owned state-funded airports, and of course, about 4,500 track miles serving 21 railroad companies. We're going to keep moving here. So it's important to note that we prioritize and evaluate as we are going through the process of making these investments. And so our key priorities are addressing the need for sustainable transportation funding for the system, sufficient to keep the system in a state of good repair, really a preservation mode, we might call that. Promoting equity at MnDOT, including the MnDOT workforce and contracts, including transportation planning and programming, and improved environmental stewardship, sustainability, and reduction of greenhouse gases from transportation. Many of you have heard me say this, but transportation is the largest emitter of greenhouse gases, both in our country and in the state. Then we're going to go to a very high level change item request page. And I'm gonna actually go through each one of these items for you. So I'm not gonna spend a ton of time, but we might come back to this slide in particular. This is slide 7 when we come back to have questions and discuss this. So there's a number of items here and we're gonna go to the next slide right now. Multimodal, this is our multimodal transportation package, the current state of affairs. The emphasis is on maintaining the condition of roads, bridges, and roadside infrastructure, the National Highway System pavement condition of the National Highway System, a little redundant, is projected to continuously worsen after 2020. This is without more resources, and this is before IIJA is taken into account. Bridge condition is projected to significantly decline in future years, with 12% of our National Highway System bridges deck area being in poor condition by 2031. This is important, again, to mention. This is before, this is our look at the system before the federal money comes into it. Next slide. So the federal bill, known both people use IIJA, the Infrastructure and Jobs Act, and they use BIL, the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law. We usually say IIJA at MnDOT right now. It's less clever of an acronym, but very descriptive of what is happening here. So the Federal Infrastructure Act will provide $4.8 billion over 5 years into the federal highway formula funding for roads and bridges. This represents, for MnDOT, a 30% increase in the state highway formula funding. It also will result in 20% of an increase in the existing core programs. We call those, we could talk about those core programs, but many of you know them by their names, their acronyms like INFRA, RAISE, and a number of other grants. And there's going to be four new programs, which are Carbon, Protect, Bridge Program, and the Electric Vehicle Program. So there's also, sorry, I misspoke there. The 20% increase in existing core programs are the core programs that come directly to the department already. There's also going to be new and expanded competitive grant programs for state, local, and tribal governments that are available. And we'll talk a little bit about that as well. Next slide. Multimodal transportation package, Minnesota's estimated allocation looks like roughly this, these amounts for the next number of years. These are rough estimates. They are per year. So in terms of the Federal Highway Administration, MnDOT will get 70% of that money, $170 million a year. It also means that we need to match that money. This is important for both the capital request and the supplemental request, that that's about a $40 million match. The Federal Highway Administration also has a distribution that we will make to local units of government, counties and cities. That's $70 million a year. It needs a 20% match, which is approximately $20 million a year. The federal aeronautics area will bring in $60 million. That needs a little less of a match, $7 million. So that's all of our feeder and those other airports. This is not the MSP airport. And the FTA, these are the MnDOT portions only. So this is not the Met Council portion, is $13 million a year with a match, a little higher match there of $7 million. The red is an important piece of this slide. This is looking at what these discretionary programs are going to be in terms of available to MnDOT to compete for and local units of government to compete for. So we took a estimate and looked at what our usual ability to draw down these funds would be, and that's about 2% of the total federal amount, so $450 million a year. That means we do need to match those dollars at 20%. And we'll get to that in a little bit about how to match those monies to make us the most competitive. Because this is really about readiness and the ability to show that you have the funds, but need the federal dollars to really help. One slight correction, the FAA number does include the MSP airport, and of that $60 million, $35 million will go to MSP of the $60 million. Next slide. So first of all, the multimodal transportation package, looking at this package, it really is about the ability to cover the need for that match amount. So dedicating $852 million from the general fund to various transportation investments over 5 years. So it's a big number, everyone, $852 million, but it is over the 5 years. And I want to break that out for you. So $384 million of that would be for the Trunk Highway Fund match, covers the state match needed for MnDOT's portion of IIJA, $268 million distributed for roads and bridges on both the county and municipal state aid system, and then $200 million for the general fund match for activities off of the trunk highway system.
Madam Commissioner, I know Representative Petersburg has his hand up. Why don't we have the commissioner finish and then we'll take questions.
Okay.
Proceed, Madam Commissioner.
All right. I think that one of the important pieces of this is that we need budget authority to be able to spend these federal dollars that come to MnDOT as part of IIJA. I know that that is very much on your mind, Mr. Chairman, that this is a big part of the work of this session, which is the approximately $156 million per year that we need authorized to be able to spend it on our system and take advantage of those dollars. In the case of this year, that is going to be a very quick turnaround because there are dollars that are available up until the end of the fiscal year. So when we look at the multimodal transportation package summary of spending year by year, you will see the breakdown here, and I'm going to take you through some more detail yet. So first of all, if Sam could go to the Towards Zero Deaths slide, one of the things that is very important in this transportation package is safety. I know you had, Mr. Chairman, a hearing on traffic safety as well as all users in the system. MnDOT's goal is to reduce fatalities and serious injuries on all roadways in Minnesota. The goal is to have no more than 225 traffic fatalities by 2025. This is a huge stretch at this point because the numbers have obviously been going in the opposite direction. They've been going up and up rapidly. So investments in safety through the IIJA are critical to meeting these safety goals in the coming year. And we're going to talk a little bit about what that looks like. There's also the economic impact of this multimodal transportation package. The investment will grow Minnesota's jobs and economy. It's also going to be able to provide new and improved infrastructure, making it less costly for both workers and businesses to operate, putting hopefully some downward pressure on those consumer prices. Here, you are actually looking at a turbine coming up the hill in Duluth. And I see that Chair Murphy is here, and she is well aware that we have both an active project happening in Duluth right now. We call it the Twin Ports Interchange. Local folks might know it by a different name. And that interchange needs to be redone and is being redone right now because it allows for a better ease of the traffic, but it also provides the setup to redo the Blatnik Bridge. And there needed to be a number of approaches redone and other things in this section of roadway as well. But this economic impact is important because it's still, along with safety, is a core part of MnDOT's work. We also want to maximize the federal transportation climate funding that's available. So part of that funding is $2 million. We would need $2 million in general funds annually to leverage the opportunities through the IIJA that reduce greenhouse gas emissions, build resiliency to address climate change, and $350 million over the 5 years is guaranteed in formula programs to help target emission reductions or climate resiliency. And as you can see here, we've had a number of issues on the system where because of higher, more intense rainfall, that we have had washouts of roadways, culverts, a number of things. And so when we talk about resiliency, it's both about the resiliency of the infrastructure itself, as well as planning for the future for different fueling, particularly electric vehicles. Next slide. We also at MnDOT have had a number of operating impacts. And so we are looking to make sure that we are able to adequately pay our folks who work at MnDOT. Particularly, you can see here on the left, we have folks out repairing at night a guardrail system. This is typical. We do a lot of work in the evenings and at night because it disrupts traffic less. And sometimes it's just a downright safety need. We need to get out there and get it done. And then of course, we want to pay our snow fighters well. We need this compensation adjustment. And I would tell you that we are not always as competitive with counties and cities in terms of folks like the snow fighters. So we want to make sure that we can at least keep up here. Next slide. So here is the compensation operating impacts by the budget area. You can see the two largest areas represent the two largest areas of MnDOT. Operations and maintenance, that's the folks out fixing those guardrails, doing a number of activities, including snow fighting. And then you also see program delivery. And that program delivery is how we do our planning to deliver on either the upgrade, repair, a number of items that are wrapped into that program delivery area. And that accounts for 41 and 42% of that operating impact by activity area. The next thing is corridors of commerce, project scoring and statute clarification that we need. And this does have a budget impact in that you all worked very hard to secure some more funding for the corridors of commerce program, but it is dependent on making a change here, revising the corridors of commerce statute to improve the clarity, the public involvement, and the cost effectiveness. Being able to clarify both program and scoring expectations for the project recommendations, clarifying the definition, and I know, Mr. Chair, that Representative Torkelson is very familiar with this, clarifying the definition of regional balance. And we would propose also creating a small project category that would allow for the competition of projects under the $10 million mark. All of you who are aware of Corridors of Commerce know that this money goes fast. It's a popular program, but it also could use to have a little delineation for smaller but yet high impact projects. All right, next slide is the Armor Radio Communications Tower and building replacement. So we're asking for $2 million in state funds to be able to replace the Armor Radio system and towers and equipment. This, the existing towers that we're talking about here were built in the 50s and the 60s. And they really provide for that critical 24/7 federal, state, tribal, and local public safety personnel's ability to communicate across the state. And this would not, this is a few towers. I think it's about three towers that would be replaced with this, but they're in desperate need. Next slide is the rail grade safety account and the crossing account. And it's an increase to the grade safety crossing account from $1 million to $2.5 million a year. I know, Mr. Chairman, this has been a passion of yours, is being able to make sure that we are making these critical improvements that where trunk highways are crossing with railroads and improving the safety out there on the system. So this is a combination of trunk highway fund and special revenue fund dollars. And then finally, utility aircraft replacement of $7 million. So this is $7 million of general fund dollars to replace two aircraft. We lovingly call these aircraft the pickup trucks of the sky. They are the aircraft that take MnDOT Aeronautics employees and technicians to work with your local airports, to work in case there's a case of an equipment failure, to be able to repair that. It's also essential to accessing seaplane bases, heliports, and the airports themselves. This is not the plane that the governor travels on or anyone else travels on. This is a desperate need in a lot of ways. One of these airplanes really does have a lot of duct tape on it. And I don't think that from a risk management standpoint, it's a good idea for us to continue to utilize this sort of vehicle with employees. And it would be very good to get it replaced here. So, Mr. Chair, that is the end of our presentation. I am happy to take questions and talk about, some people might have questions about the images. Some people might have questions about the budget itself. So I'm happy to address those questions.
Thanks so much, Commissioner. And this was a very, very helpful overview of the budget. You answered a number of my questions just in the presentation related to the IIJA. Now I know to call it that. Our first question is from Representative Petersburg, and then we'll move on to Representative Hausman after that. And members, we have a good chunk of time here, about 20 minutes or so for Q&A. So, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Madam Commissioner, for presenting this. I have two questions. The first one gets back to the IIJA, and that is, I know that there's kind of a complexity there, and not necessarily a confusion, but a little uncertainty until the Congress actually passes it and moves it forward. Do you have any kind of crystal ball or idea how that will impact the budget? How will that impact the need for the matching funds and what carry forward might be needed? Because those are all kind of questions up in the air, and we really don't know a lot of that, but you might have some insight.
Excellent question. Proceed, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative Petersburg, it is such a critical question. We do need an appropriation for most of this money. There are some dollars that have been made available. I believe some bridge dollars have been made available to states or will be anticipated here soon. But most of the money, especially the discretionary programs, need authorization. And so we were hopeful that the deadline that Congress set for itself here it would be met. My understanding is there is good work going on in Congress to be able to get this done in March. We, of course, are anxious to get these dollars. I think the hard part of your job this year is that we likely will not have as much detail as we would like on the discretionary programs until you're out of session. And so that is why we are asking for a little different way of doing this. And that is kind of putting together a fund of dollars that would be available for MnDOT and local communities both to draw from as they prepare their applications for the discretionary funds. But you are correct. We need an appropriation here, and we're still optimistic that our congressional folks are going to get that done in the next month or so.
Thank you. If I could have a couple follow-ups, Mr. Chair.
Absolutely. Proceed, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. Yeah, and that kind of leads to the kind of follow-up question with that. And then I have one question about railroad crossings. But, you know, as we get farther and farther down the line with the distribution over 5 years, that could impact, you know, how much goes into future years as well, which kind of just screws up everything. So you might want to comment that. But my second follow-up question was in regards to the railroad crossings. I think I understood from the governor's preliminary budget proposal that a good share of those dollars was for the rail line between St. Paul and Duluth. Is that where a lot of the growth is in railroad crossing, or is this just general across the board?
So,
Commissioner,
Mr. Chair and Representative Petersburg, I do love your line of thinking on what Congress needs to do yet here, and we will remain optimistic that they can get their part of this done. I don't want to speculate whether there would be, whether there would be an extension or further ability to use the dollars if they wait longer than March. That would be challenging. I think that the other part of that you mentioned is that this bill is a bill that we anticipate, the first year is kind of a fast start here to be able to receive the funds and utilize the funds. Years 2, 3, 4, and 5, I think, get a lot more interesting in a lot of ways because there's more flexibility in building out the type of projects and programs that we could participate in. And so year 1 is going to be real fast, and year 2, 3, 4, and 5, we hope that we can, working with all of you, have that good plan in place. Of course, MnDOT is a planning agency as well, and there is the 20-year plan, the 10-year plan, and the 4-year plan for road construction, and we draw heavily on that in any of the work that we're doing today. But there is some flexibility out in those out years. I think on the rail grade crossing safety account, you might be talking about the bonding proposal versus this account. So this is kind of a standard MnDOT account that really helps in, we've analyzed, I believe, all rail grade crossings in the state and have them in a priority order of how we tackle them. And there are a number out there, I think, for this year that we're hoping to tackle already. But this rail grade crossing safety account is for the entire system, not for a specific project. In the bonding bill, there is a proposal that would have more direct impact on the Northern Lights Express project.
Thank you.
All right. Are you any follow-ups, Representative Petersburg?
No, thank you. That was, I appreciate these answers. Thank you.
Okay. We will go to Representative Hausman, then Representative Cagle. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You referenced earlier that transportation is the biggest contributor to the climate change issue. And then the two issues are cars and planes. And with cars, it means we should be planning a more robust public mass transit system. And with planes, even though they promise better fuel in the future, that promise is a long ways away. So what many people feel is we should have a better system of intercity passenger rail so that short distances have an alternative to plane travel. And I have watched with huge frustration as all of the other, our Midwest economic competitors, have moved more quickly than we. Kansas and Texas and Missouri and Indiana and, of course, Illinois and Michigan. Even Wisconsin got its money on the table faster for the second train to Chicago. So it's just been enormously frustrating when I hear our program described as a small program. I'm a commissioner of the Midwest Passenger Rail Commission, and I sat at a recent meeting and watched state after state make their complicated plans that had multiple projects going forward and multiple applications. Oh, I'm sorry, I can't even put myself on mute because I'm talking. It's been totally bewildering to me why our, we're in other areas where we're happy that we've got the fourth largest system in the country, and when we talk about roads and bridges, and yet here we want to trail our economic competitors. And obviously you can hear the frustration in my voice, but All Aboard Minnesota has done such good work, and their finding was that the line going south that would eventually connect us through southern Minnesota to Des Moines and to Kansas City would be the highest projected ridership. It's not even on our radar. And we should be connecting with that Midwest system that is being built.
Thank you, Representative. I think I'd like to have Commissioner Anderson Kelleher respond to your overall vision on passenger rail and the supplemental budget. Commissioner Anderson Kelleher.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, and I personally have shared your passion for passenger rail. We're excited that honestly the second line to Chicago is likely to be sped up here, and we may need your assistance on that sooner. The reason I say that is the Kansas City Southern merger with CP Rail means that that project can move ahead sooner. I think that's an important project, that second line to Chicago, to give people that real round trip option in how they travel. In the governor's bonding bill, in Governor Walz's bonding bill, there is $16.1 million recommended that would contribute to the NLX line. And then there also is money in the IIJA, $36 billion for discretionary funds. That money was often debated during the process of putting this bill together about whether it would be for new start projects or expansion projects. And we certainly can follow up with you on that. I think that there was at one time a hope for even more resources in the IIJA that would allow for more new starts. So NLX is a new start. The line that you mentioned going down to the south would be a new start. And I think without those federal resources, it would make it difficult to do those projects on our own, but they're obviously important projects. And I share with you the interest in making sure that passenger rail is an option. It moves a lot of people. You are correct about less greenhouse gas emissions. And I would just also wrap into that less greenhouse gas emissions, the work that's being done on electrification. And that's not only in the car passenger section of the world, but we have been hearing in our Sustainable Transportation Advisory Committee about work being done by railroads as well. And we can continue that conversation as it goes forward.
Thank you, Commissioner. Did you have a follow-up, Representative Hausman?
Oh, thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Vice Chair Cagle, you're next on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, kind of some of my interest in this is around the discretionary funds and the grant program. My understanding is a majority of the new funding that comes into Minnesota will go through the formulas, but there is that portion of the discretionary grant funding that's going to need the matching. Do you have any idea about how much the feds are looking how much of a match some of these programs are going to take?
Commissioner.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I think that maybe Sam Brown could pop up the slide that has that estimate on it. We actually have a slide prepared that shows the estimate of the discretionary funds coming to Minnesota. It's approximately, Minnesota should be able to maximize 2% of the yearly total of the federal available dollars. So in this case, this is the new and expanded discretionary grant programs that we're showing you here today, that red line. And our estimate is it could mean about $450 million a year to Minnesota, but it would need to be matched with approximately 20%. And that's to the point of setting up this idea of a fund that we could draw upon to be able to help a project be most competitive. And so I'll give you an example. I've learned a lot in the last 3 years. The most competitive projects in the country both meet the goals of the program. So in some cases, the goals are around safety. The goals might be around the ability to move commodities. In some cases, it could be another type of goal. But when we're successful, we're competitive because we have over 50% of the funds amassed for a project. And I would say well over 50%. And that's why we believe that it is important to establish this fund this year, to be able to, as both from a MnDOT standpoint with the state system, as well as local units of government making their proposals, it could really help boost a project's competitiveness. More often than not, when we ask for feedback from like the Federal Highway Administration, they will tell us the reason we weren't as competitive is we had not identified the full funding package, and that the federal money is part of a package, but not does not complete the package. And I think they're really looking to complete these projects and move them forward in this IIJA bill. I hope that helps.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Representative Cagle. Yes, sorry, a follow up, and then we'll have Representative Koznick.
I have two questions quickly. So the federal government is setting their parameters around these programs. Would Minnesota, are we going to know before you know, the end of session what their guidance is going to be? I know you said March. Is there a way that we could set our own Minnesota standards when applying for this discretionary fund that either go above and beyond the federal standards, or is it kind of just going to have to be what the feds tell us this money can be used for?
Commissioner.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Cagle, I think it's an interesting question. I think what we will know about, and we're already starting to see, is the two of the bigger discretionary programs that have existed for a while have already gone through some updates in the Biden administration, and that includes RAISE and INFRA. And of course, Minnesota has been successful in the past in both programs. They target a little bit different types of projects. And so we already know today that RAISE is focusing more on communities of interest where there's been economic disadvantage or racial disadvantage. And there's also a focus in that program on multimodalism. So being able to provide projects that are not only a roadway project, but they usually have some other combination effect, whether it's, you know, the integration with the transit system, whether it's good facilities for walking and rolling. That has also been lifted up in the criteria of that program. I don't know that having additional criteria from the state is going to help either MnDOT or being able to be more competitive. I mean, it's really both. Do you largely match the recs in the program, and do you have the money identified? Those are kind of two big drivers. They're not the only ones, but two of the biggest. So I hope that's helpful in talking about, and I would say that what I meant by March is we're hopeful the appropriations bill gets done by March. And then after that, the Federal Highway Administration, the FTA, others will be rolling out, USDOT will be rolling out their guidelines around different programs, particularly the new programs where we don't have those yet today. And that's partly because of the appropriations process not having completed.
Last question, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, quickly, and then we'll need to move to Representative Kosnick.
So,
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so kind of hearing about some of those multimodal lines, that boy, do I got a project for you. But last question is some of the smaller entities, local governments and things like that, that don't have maybe a public works department or the ability, the capacity to apply for some of these grants. How are we addressing that, giving assistance, helping, grant applications for some of these locals?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cagle. Our state aid system office, it has been a particularly good resource to local communities to both help guide and review applications. We are often asked as MnDOT to provide letters of either support or information around a project by a local community as well. And I don't think in my 3 years we've ever turned anyone down on that, but we do want to be clear that some projects are more ready than others. And I think this is our whole theme here, is being the best prepared that we could possibly be to both help our local communities bring home those federal dollars, as well as MnDOT bringing in the federal dollars and being competitive. And so there are some resources out there. We are exploring as MnDOT, can we provide more technical assistance for communities? And we're actively exploring that, because you raise a really good point. There are communities that do not have their own public works department to be able to apply for these funds.
Thank you, Commissioner. Our last question belongs to Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, sir, Mr. Chair, and good to see you, Commissioner, for now. My kind of question was, what kind of parameters are you proposing, or is the administration or department proposing around this discretionary funds? I recognize the need to be able to act quickly to leverage the dollars, but I'm concerned about the parameters that you would have if we allocate or appropriate dollars into a discretionary fund. Are you proposing that then the funds that are used at the discretion of the executive branch then, or will there be some legislative oversight? Because that is our job, to appropriate funds, and I would like to see that delineation maintained.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Kosnick, I think the important part here is the fund provides the ability for MnDOT or a local community to say there's a source of funding available to match the funds. It's less so about, you know, in some ways, MnDOT's not necessarily in control of the discretionary programs that have been laid out in IIJA. Those are already there. The bridge program, I think you want us to spend money on bridges. So being very competitive on bridge funding would be important. There's money on that's available, or in a program that'll be available on carbon reduction. That I think can look at a number of different issues that we have plans for already, everything from a number of things that we've talked about in this committee with the ability to help Main Street programs where we're going through town, we're already going to redo the roadway, but part of that may also be competitive because it increases the ability of people to walk or bike to their destination. There's also money available for reconnecting historically divided communities, and that will be a competitive program. Many people think of Rondo, but there are other communities around the state who might want to access those dollars. And so we will go within the parameter of what the feds have put out there in the program. We can share with you what we know about those programs today. We won't be going outside of those parameters. And then I think if there needs to be some more reporting back, much as was done during the ARRA funds, I'm familiar with this because I chaired the governor's broadband task force under Governor Dayton. And one of the things that was required of those ARRA funds was a regular reporting back on how the broadband funds were being used. The broadband task force actually did that in their annual report then and had maps and told you all how the projects were going and those sorts of things. So I think that it's a combination effect here. It's partly being able to be nimble and be ready as projects come forward, and projects come forward partly because they're already in the planning process. And so we can share that with you. And then the second part of it is the ability to take advantage of those discretionary programs that have really often have very narrow definitions around them. And we can follow up and the government affairs team can come visit with you about what those programs are so that you have a better idea and the committee has a better idea of where we might be applying for funds. It's not to say we're gonna apply for every single program even, but some we will be more competitive because we've been doing a good planning process. I hope that helps.
Do you have a thank you, Commissioner. Do you have a follow-up, Representative Kosnick? We have a couple more minutes for this section.
No, I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. I'll look forward to seeing the actual language from the proposal, but I do have concerns relative to that. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing that, Representative Kosnick. We're right on schedule here, Commissioner, but I would just allow you the last word if you have any final thoughts, not only about the budget, but anything else you want to address the committee on. And again, I'm feeling I have so many mixed feelings here as this is your last appearance before our committee, and we'd so appreciate your time and your availability here in an extremely busy time of transition for you. So any last thoughts you have for us, and then we'll move on to DPS.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm actually in my office today, and it's quite messy as I am packing it up. I will say that, one of the great opportunities in life is to come back around and work with people that you hold in high esteem. And so I want to say to all of you, I hold you in high esteem, and it's been a great pleasure to get to come back and work in the capacity of the executive branch. And be able to, in some cases, do those really small problem-solving issues that we've worked on over the last 3 years, and in some cases, really setting up the modern transportation system of the future through the investments that you've all been making. And it's just been a great honor to serve the governor in doing this. I do have to say, and most of you know, I'm still staying at least partly in the transportation world as I'll be the new director of Public Works Department in Minneapolis, also dealing with water and a number of other items, solid waste. But I feel like at midlife, I hope it's midlife, I have finally figured out what I have loved to do the most, and working with and within the transportation family has been a great, great honor. And I'm going to continue that on. And I'm sure I'm going to work with many of you into the future as you go on with your work. So I just want to thank everyone. Thank again, all the staff. It's a lot of work. I think I'm uniquely poised to know just how much work happens at the legislature, and really have great respect for all of you. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. A great honor to work with you again.
Thank you so much, Commissioner. And of course, there's lots to say, but I'll just say one thing that I have really appreciated, and I think I speak for all of the committee and the staff, is that you were always and are and will be for the next couple of weeks, but are always available to legislators. It just seemed like if there was ever any kind of issue that folks contacted me about, big or small, you were on the phone with members of the House and Senate very, very quickly, troubleshooting, trying to solve problems. I hope that that is a model that people in public service can follow, because I know that meant a lot to me. It meant a lot to so many of us as colleagues on both sides of the aisle that you were there for us, and we appreciate that so much, among many other things that we appreciate about you. So good luck to you. We will remain in contact and appreciate your presentation today and all of your public service over the years.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. And I'm sure the department and the good people at MnDOT, which I do love, I have great affection for them. They will continue on with that level of service for all of you. So thank you and your constituents.
We appreciate it so much. Thanks, Thanks. For your presentation. Members, we are going to shift now to the Department of Public Safety, and we have another wonderful commissioner and former legislator with us, Commissioner Harrington, who also has been so responsive to us as legislators as well. So, Commissioner Harrington, I know that you also have Mike Hansen, Colonel Langer, John Wolfgram available as well, but if you want to start us off, welcome to the committee.
Chair Hornstein, members of the committee, thank you very much. That's a tough act to follow. I do not relish trying to follow Margaret ever. Having served with her now in the administration now for the last 3 years, while I am looking forward to working with her in the future, as you have articulated, it is a great loss to Minnesota to see her leaving the Department of Transportation. So, but on to the Department of Public Safety. Department of Public Safety, my name is, for the record, is John Harrington. I am the commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. The mission of the Department of Public Safety is to serve all communities to build a safer Minnesota. And over the last 3 years and over this last 12-month period, we have been very actively building that safer Minnesota, whether that is having state troopers throughout the length and breadth of the state responding to a record number of crashes, literally hundreds more crashes than we had seen before, clocking speeders at hundreds, over well in excess of 100 mile an hour speeds, to reopening DVS centers in every corner of the state, to responding to the needs of the state in regards to pipeline safety. We have been literally as many places as we possibly can be. And sometimes it felt like we were double booked because it seemed like there were days where we needed to have people in the Capitol. We needed to have people in greater Minnesota and every place in between. So I am very appreciative of the committee's time today. Very quickly, the Department of Public Safety, I'm not sure if we're unique in this regard, but it always strikes me that part of being double booked is oftentimes the fact that we're in two different committees in terms of our funding. We're in your committee under Transportation Policy and Finance that oversees the funding for the Minnesota State Patrol, which is, I would argue, the premier traffic safety agency within the state of Minnesota and one of the finest across the country. Office of Traffic Safety, which is Mike Hansen's division, which really is both the data center and the spokesperson for how do we reduce unnecessary crashes. And I appreciate that you have adopted that terminology, that we're talking more about crashes these days than we are about accidents, because in my world, crashes are oftentimes predictable, whether they're due to a breakdown of enforcement, breakdown of engineering, or breakdown of education. Oftentimes is not, we find that they are preventable. We also have the Department of Driver and Vehicle Services, where we license both vehicles and the drivers that are on our roads. Office of Pipeline Safety, which I think goes without saying, but is really speaks to the whole issue of the interstate transportation of volatile liquids and how do we maintain that. And then our administration and the related services that are not specifically mentioned are also funded out of the Transportation Committee. Public Safety Committee, I won't belabor that, but alcohol gambling enforcement, the state fire marshal, which involves our arson investigations, our victim center, which is the Office of Justice Programs, which has been incredibly busy over this last few years and over these last few weeks, going out onto the streets to try and make sure that the families of Amir Locke and Rice and now Deshaun Hill know that there are victim services programs to support them when their loved ones have been killed tragically from gun violence. Our emergency communication network is the 911 backbone that allows, whether it's police, fire, EMS, and emergency management, to talk to each other across the state. Homeland Security and Emergency Management, which is Joe Kelly's division and has been operating both as the hub for COVID services, but has also been prepared for riots, floods, windstorms, and anything else that comes. They are all hazard statewide emergency resource. And then last but not least, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, Drew Evans's shop, which is our state investigatory agency. It is the agency that does all the crime lab, all of the crime data, and also does the use of force investigations and officer involved shootings and major crimes outside of the Twin Cities area. And more recently has been engaged in working on gun crime cases in the Twin Cities, as that we have seen record numbers of them show up in our, in literally in the backyard of the Capitol. When we look at our budget requests, and we are very appreciative of you for hearing our supplemental budget requests, I need to start out with two deficiency requests. The first is the State Patrol and the other is DVS. The State Patrol is request is for almost $1.9 million from the general fund, and it's funding to cover the costs associated with the State Patrol being tasked with responding to large-scale protests and demonstrations at the state capitol, but also in Brooklyn Center, also in the city of Minneapolis, and also in other places throughout the state, as large-scale protests has overwhelmed local law enforcement's ability to be able to be responsive to those. We continue not only to have done that in the past, which is where our deficiency currently comes from, but we recognize that with a federal trial in downtown St. Paul, that depending on how the decisions get made there, that we may well see civil unrest and once again see a need for the State Patrol. The city of St. Paul has requested us to be ready to respond if in fact something happens there. This Friday, for example, we know that Kim Potter will have her sentence given. And so once again, we are stand ready and prepared to assist local government and local police in keeping the peace. But that doesn't come without a cost. And that cost in this case cannot be borne through state trunk highway funds. And therefore we need to replenish the state trunk highway funds and also replenish the funds to the State Patrol so that they can continue. Without this funding, we will not be able to hire the number of state troopers that we need and that you have allocated to us. And so we feel it's important for us to get ahead of that, not wait till we are just before an academy, but really call this question at this early time frame. The second deficiency request is driver and vehicle services. And this one's a little more complicated and a little more Byzantine, I guess, in some regard, that it's a license plate mailing and production cost. Now, and I asked this question, and you'll hear from Director Shong here shortly, that the general tone on television was to say that there were no cars available. And in fact, I was corrected in that in fact, if you talk to the dealerships in the state of Minnesota, they will tell you that we have had just an outstanding record. They're setting new records for sales. And because we are seeing more cars sold, as we're seeing those cars have the plates not recycled, we are seeing increased demand for new plates to come to be created. In addition to that, we've also seen the online option for ordering plates become far more popular than we were budgeted for. And that now involves us sending plates. So we are producing the plates at a higher level. We are now having to mail the plates, and we're not having the cost savings that we've had in the past, where we used to send plates in bulk to deputy registers or to a government center for distribution. Now we're sending them out individually. And so there's an increased cost to produce the plates, and we've had an increased cost for making sure we can mail the plates. That increased cost to operate, to get past our deficiency is $3.925 million that we need. It is money that, for the record, is already in the driver services operating account. So a fee has already been set that will fund this request. What we are asking for is permission for us to spend it. So the money is there. It is now a matter of us being allowed to spend it properly. So there is also DPS administrative costs that we, or administrative programs that we really do believe are very, very important. And I really don't want to highlight any one as being more important than the others, but I'll give them in the order that they're listed on the slide. There's a body-worn camera reimbursement program. It has been my position since I got to DPS that body cams are like bulletproof vests for cops. They are something that you, once you've started wearing them, you never leave home without it again. They protect the department from unwarranted accusations. They allow the chief of police to hold police officers accountable when the officer has done wrong. And so it is the ideal technology to do both, protect the officer and increase officer safety. At the same time, it allows us to hold officers accountable. We're asking for a grant program or a reimbursement program of $6 million in the first year and then $1.5 million in the tails here that would allow for the initial acquisition of an operation of a body cam up to 1,000 per officer. As we looked statewide, we found that about 9,000 officers do not have body cams even as we speak. We are prioritizing this on those small departments and those departments that don't have them at all. But we recognize that after we get through that initial, this initial 6 million, if everyone takes advantage of that, there will then be ongoing costs that will come up as departments need to replace, repair, or upgrade their body cam systems. And so initially we're focused on first time users, those that have never had a body cam system, but in the future we'll be able to allow for departments that have been invested in that already to be able to take advantage of this. The second piece of this is a statewide law enforcement recruitment program. And I just left Eagan where we were having a conversation with Chief New and the fire chief down there about the drop off in recruits for policing positions. And Chief Noom made comment that 2 years ago, when he posted for two positions, he had 400 applicants for two positions. This year, he posted for two positions and he had 40 applicants. That is a drop off that is not just representative of Eagan, it's representative of departments from Duluth to Worthington and from east to west. And it is very definitely has affected the cities, the two big cities here where we're seeing recently very small, less than a half of what is authorized strength for an academy being filled. And we also know that in talking to our colleges and our universities that produce our post candidates, that they're not seeing people move, go into the criminal justice program. And so we really do believe that this requires not just an individual department's advertising for their slots, but a much broader effort that will start to build long-term and short-term, build that pool of individuals who need to come into, that we need to come into the policing profession. This will allow us to hire recruiters and also provide money for annual student loan payments. And in a lot of regards, this model is very much representative of what we saw from the military and other big corporations as they have been trying to, in a very tough labor market, try to recruit individuals to very tough work. This is a 1.97 in the first year, and then there is ongoing cost thereafter as we continue to build this. And quite literally, this is not a one and done. I really do believe this is going to take an ongoing effort to reshape the narrative about the honor that there, it is in providing this kind of public safety. Finally, last but not least, is the cancer and PTSD benefits. This will expand the eligibility for families of first responders who die in the line of duty. I was at Lieutenant Boss's funeral this Saturday down in southern Minnesota. Just an outstanding public servant. 18 years. He's a 38-year-old man who died of cancer after having served for 18 years in the fire service. And that his family is not sure whether or not the state will recognize his death as line of duty is something that he fought for throughout the last few years of his life as he was battling cancer. I really do believe that we need and can do better with our first responders. And by first responders, I'm speaking to about cops and firefighters and medics who are all too often dying from cancer. And often we're also seeing, and this is a conversation I've had, especially with my fire and police partners, they're dying from the result of PTSD. We talked about it again today down in Eagan about what do cops and firefighters see that they can't unsee? And how do they recover? How can they get back into work if we cannot help them? And so we believe that the $1 million in FY 23 and then an ongoing cost is absolutely the right direction we should be going if we're to respond to the needs of our first responders, the people that come when you are having your worst possible day, when the worst possible thing in your life has happened. These are the young men and women who respond to those, and we need to help provide protection for them and their families when the unthinkable has happened to them. At this time, absent any questions, I would then pass the baton to our new DVS director, Hong Xiong.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Pong John, Director of the Driver and Vehicle Services Division. And of course, our mission is to deliver customer-focused driver and vehicle services by optimizing technology and building efficiencies that value employees, support business partners, and earn the trust of all Minnesotans. I'm very happy to be here today and talk about the couple of budget item or supplemental budget requests that we have in front of you today. So the first one is the collection of race data and race and ethnicity data. This is a partnership between the Office of Traffic Safety Division, led by Director Mike Hansen, who is on the call and will be available for questions at the end of the presentation. So definitely available for any of the questions regarding the research portion of this proposal. But this proposal aims to provide transparency in traffic citations in correlation to demographic data, specifically to race and ethnicity. The proposal is to be able to collect this data so that it can be passed over to the Office of Traffic Safety, where they can put the information together and then share it publicly, again, with the goal of creating transparency in traffic citation across the state. Our proposal would be to collect the data at the time of application of a credential. So that would include driver's licenses, permits, and the Minnesota ID in all of the categories, standard, real, and enhanced. And it would be optional for Minnesotans to choose to share this data or not. We would not hold their application hostage to this, but we are hopeful that they do share the data so that we can get as complete information as possible. We propose to use the categories that the U.S. Census does. It's a familiar format and relative to the conversation. And we also are planning to not have the data on the physical credential itself. We're also planning to not have the data available to law enforcement in this process. And lastly, we are proposing to make this private data under Chapter 13. So this does mean that we'll specifically call out the Office of Traffic Safety to share more detailed information so they can do the connection to the citation information. And it also means that at a summary level, even under private data, it is available at summary level. And we are our proposal also includes resources to support those kind of requests for summary level data. This second proposal here is to increase the data auditing capacity, specifically in our data misuse team. Currently, we have one person that does all of the audits for misuse. The proposal is to add two more positions. this area is responsible for monitoring all the activity, all the and the usage of the data within our MinDrive system. There are currently over 14,000 users, and every potential misuse case requires an iterative process where the auditor will work closely with representatives specific to that case to confirm or deny that misuse actually took place or didn't take place. And because of that activity and increased number of users, we are asking for two additional bodies to do some of that work.
Mr. Zhang, do you have any more slides? Because I want to make sure that I get enough time for Fire Marshal Smith.
I have, yes, just one last slide in it.
Okay. And then we have at least one question after Mr. Smith. So proceed, Mr. John.
Excellent. And this last request is for security cameras at 24 locations. As with the service, as with others in the service industry, we are seeing an uptick in aggressive and violent behavior from customers. And we believe that having these cameras in place will not only deter that behavior, but also provide evidence for pursuing of pursuing issues after the fact. Within this proposal, we're also looking to provide a reimbursement program for deputy registrars who are a critical partner in this work, who are also experiencing the same behavior in our conversations with them. And this would be for up to $5,000 and matching up to 50%. And with that, I would happily request that Fire Marshal Jim Smith is recognized to present.
And thank you, Mr. Zhang. And I just also wanted to personally congratulate you on your new position, and we're looking forward to working with you. And members, we're going to hear from Fire Marshal Smith and then take questions. And I know we already have a question from Representative Petersburg. Representative Petersburg, I'll be calling on you after the Fire Marshal's presentation. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jim Smith. I'm the state fire marshal for the state of Minnesota. I also am the director of Minnesota Office of Pipeline Safety, which is a regulatory division for over 64,000 miles of pipeline throughout the state. Next slide, please. Basically, what we're looking for is to remove the statutory or specified penalties amounts for pipeline violations. Currently, MinOps has a lower fine or civil penalty schedule than the federal or PHMSA has on their books. And we would like to bring that civil penalty up in line with the federal agencies. Our biggest concern is that every time we have an audit, we are dinged, so to speak, for not having the proper civil penalty amounts. And this could have the potential of PHMSA decreasing the grant awards to MinOps. So we are asking to basically make the civil penalties that we are assessing congruent with the federals. That's all I have.
Thank you, Fire Marshal, and thank you for your excellent work. Members, again, I think the Fire Marshal reminds us that we both have budgetary and policy initiatives from the governor to consider. So I appreciate the work that you all are doing at the Department of Public Safety, and we have about 12 minutes now left for questions, and I'm going to give the first one to Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think this may be going to Commissioner Harrington, but maybe to some of the others. I saw a lot of his presentation as supplemental budget that was confusing or needed clarification, because it didn't seem like really a lot of those things like local law enforcement expenditures and so forth that were really underneath the responsibility of the Transportation Department and the budgets that are being transferred over from that. And so maybe he could clarify for us those items that were presented just because it's part of his budget and what really is part of the responsibility of the transfers out of our trunk highway funds, et cetera.
Commissioner Harrington, sounds like that question's directed to you.
Chair Hornstein, Representative Petersburg, I appreciate the question, and it is absolutely the most logical question you could possibly have asked. The department's administrative office for these services is funded out of the transportation side of our budget, and therefore we have asked for the funding to come through this committee because grants would be administered through the department's administration and the commissioner's office. So we recognize that these are general fund dollars as often as not, but that for them to get to the right place within the administration so that we could actually get the money out to the community where it needs to go, it would have to come through your committee and then move out from our administrative offices as grants for, you know, the same way we do with bulletproof vests and the same way we do with other line of duty deaf benefits.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Petersburg, did you have a follow-up?
Well, I'll just say a comment. You know, it's one of the things we're wrestling with in our task force is to, you know, try to figure out the most logical, appropriate places for the funding sources. And so I'm sure this will be a continued discussion over the time, and I know that past practice has kind of indicated this direction, but it's worthy for us to discuss that maybe at a later date, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
I appreciate your bringing that up, Representative Petersburg. Members, are there any additional questions for the Department of Public Safety for any of our guests that made presentations? I'm going to scan the committee roster here. I don't see any. So I don't have a question myself here. So with that, Commissioner Harrington, did you want to make any kind of concluding comments or your advice or suggestions here that maybe there's anything that hasn't been covered or things that you would want the committee to keep in mind as we consider your budget?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my comments will be very brief. I do want to remind that this committee has appropriated funds for us to build the State Patrol and to build DVS so that they can be outstanding representatives of the state. They are, in many regards, they are probably the state agencies that people have the most contact with, some voluntarily, as in Pong Chong's shop, and others less so if they have a fire or they have a crash, where Colonel Langer and Jim Smith's folks get in contact with them. We are building the operation of public service based in no small part upon the transportation and the deficiencies to the State Patrol and the deficiencies to DVS, we really do feel will have a bad and a negative impact on our ability to provide the services that this committee has dictated and has advised us that they want to see. And we also do believe that the administrative programs like the body cams and the cancer PTS, they're absolutely necessary programs as we move forward into the future for supporting those people that are supporting us. So thank you for your time, your attention, and we look forward to continuing this conversation with all of you as we move along through the budget process.
Thank you, Commissioner Harrington. We appreciate your work. We appreciate your partnership with us. And like Commissioner Kelleher, I have always appreciated your willingness to engage with legislators, return our calls quickly, and meet with us when needed. So appreciate that very much and look forward to our continued work together as we work through your budget. So with that, members, I don't see any additional questions or comments. So before I adjourn, I just wanted to give everyone a heads up about our next meeting, which is on Thursday, February 17th. We'll be hearing House File 3035. That's my bill related to an audit for the Southwest Light Rail project. And it's going to be another busy day. So we have that bill. And then we're also going to have Rick King as our guest. And this is also going to be of interest to the Department of Public Safety. Mr. King has done a independent assessment of various issues related to driver and vehicle services. I think all of you have his report. If not, we'll resend it to you. He'll be going over his report, and that will really be our entire, that will cover our entire hearing time on Thursday between the one bill and the report. So get ready for that. And seeing no further member questions or comments, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.